across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is the Return of the Unexplained. Well, once again, here I am in the evening light, and because we are in lockdown, as you may well be, it is incredibly quiet. No planes, no buses tonight, nothing. So it's just you and me here. In fact, I'm going to pull back the curtain. I've been doing some recordings and I've had the curtain closed to keep the sun out. So if you just excuse me for a second here. Oh, I'm going to do that and look out at the trees and see that spring is definitely out there. That beautiful shade of green that it's impossible to mimic. I don't even think the greatest artists have quite been able to capture the greenery that I can see here. And even though I'm in a tiny little apartment by myself, tiny little flat, as we say here in the UK, at least I can look at it out the window, even if I don't have a lovely big garden to sit in, as some people do. Thank you very much for all of your emails. No shout-outs particularly on this edition. What I'm going to do is let you hear a conversation that I have just recorded for my radio show. It is the third hour of the last radio show that you would have heard on the 26th of April, with a man called Archbishop Ronald File Enright. And he is an exorcist, retired, but as you will hear in the conversation, not really, because he says his work is ongoing. Now, this conversation is not for the faint-hearted, and because we're broadcasting the conversation, we have on United Kingdom Radio, quite rightly, to make that point very clear, as you will hear. So, Ronald File Enright, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained, and I will take you to the radio show in just a moment here. If you want to get in touch with me, please go to my website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link and you can send me a message of any kind from there. If you've got a guest suggestion, whatever, it's just nice to hear from you, especially at the moment when all of us are coping with a completely new situation, which we hope will be over soon enough. So, theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam, my webmaster, thank you, Adam, is the place to go. Okay, I think that's all I have to say. Let's get to my radio show, where I'm in the process of introducing the guest on that particular hour of The Unexplained. Here it comes. The Unexplained with Howard Hughes hits midnight, and we look into another week. If you're in lockdown, then I hope you're getting by and finding ways to occupy yourself and try to keep the worries, many of which there are for so many of us, at bay. Sometimes it's not an easy thing to do, and sometimes I've found, maybe you've found too, it's a good thing, a diversion, to turn the radio on and listen to something that is not the news. Now, I spent most of my life doing news, and here I am recommending people maybe just to take a break from it, but I know that it's helped me massively just on occasions to turn it all off, because a lot of it you cannot influence in any way. And while I'm on that subject, just a word of thanks to all of the emergency service workers. Maybe you're coming off a shift now, and we know those shifts are hard. I had a personal experience this week. I was coming out of my local supermarket, and I parked my car in a little roadway behind the supermarket. And coming out of one of the houses on that roadway were two nurses, and they looked terribly tired. I felt for them enormously. One of them was wearing full PPE. The other one was wearing partial PPE, and I think, although I don't know for certain, they were coming from the home of somebody affected by or potentially affected by coronavirus. And I guess those visits happen every single day. And most of them, we don't get to see. All of these things are happening like clockwork when we're doing other things. So thank you to everybody in the medical services, the NHS, the police, people who drive buses and trains, keeping transport going. People who work in supermarkets, making sure that everybody keeps, hopefully, 6 feet away from each other, keeping the shelves stocked and making sure that the trolleys are sanitized and not too many people are in the store. And I have to say, my local store, where I've been going exclusively during this period, has done a fabulous job. And thank you to all of the people in the Teddington branch of this particular large supermarket for doing what I think is a great job. So many people doing that. And what am I doing during this? Well, I'm just keeping my podcasts and radio show going, which I can do from home these days. So, you know, not much really here compared with the gargantuan efforts that some people are putting in. So on behalf of everybody at Talk Radio and everybody listening to this show, thank you very much for what you're doing during this period. Now, after midnight, we get into topics that can be somewhat scary, can be a little disturbing, and it's the right time to do it. But there are a number of things before we talk to the guest on this hour, Archbishop Ronald Foyle Enright, exorcist in the United States. Number one, this conversation is offered to you for entertainment purposes only. Number two, if you feel that you have any issues of any kind, maybe mental issues or whatever, then your first port of call must, and it's common sense, be to go to your general practitioner. Third, we are not here to advocate or support anything, so we're not advocating exorcism or anything that you hear here. In fact, we advocate, as ever, that you take a balanced approach to all things, and you know you don't live your life by anything that you hear on this show, that you take, as I try to do with all of the topics that I get into, a sensible, balanced view, and take on board what you think you might have of interest or be of need, and leave the rest in the pending pile. I think that's the way to do it. Just before we get to the guest, the Archbishop Ronald Foyle Enright, exorcist, just a couple of shout-outs to do here. Some people have been in touch this week, and thank you to them. Dan, nice to hear from you. Peter, thank you for your email. Zed in Texas. Kyla in Papua New Guinea, nice to hear from you again. And Mark the Courier, good to hear from you, Mark. And Diggy in West Sussex. Now, Diggy sent me a photograph of a scene, a place, where something had been observed, if I got the story right, Diggy. This was near East Grinstead, a Crawley area, West Sussex. And you came across, I think along with your husband, something that looked like either a UFO or a flying car. Now, Diggy and her husband would like to know more about this, and so would I. So if you've seen anything in West Sussex, maybe in that area, you know that, I think it's, is it the A24 that goes up, maybe I've got the wrong road number there, but it goes up the back way from West Sussex, Chichester Way, and then past Gatwick Airport, all the way past Crawley and places like that. This is the kind of area that Diggy saw what Diggy saw. So if you observed anything, go to my website, theunexplained.tv, and you can send me a message there and let me know, because Diggy and I would both be very keen to get more information on whatever Diggy saw in the skies over West Sussex very recently. And thank you for the photograph and for getting in touch, Diggy. All right, let's get to the guest now, this hour in California, USA. A Catholic priest for almost 40 years, Archbishop Ron Foyle Enright has been involved in the ministry of exorcism and was trained by exorcists who were his mentors and former bishops. The stories that you're going to hear will be disturbing stories, so if you are of a disposition that is maybe scared and frightened by such things, I wouldn't want you to be, and I suggest that maybe you go and listen to one of my podcasts and then come back when Daryl is on at 1 o'clock. Because I wouldn't want you to be going away scared. But having said that, I think you may well find the conversation that is about to come to you with the Archbishop Ronald Foyle Enright more than interesting. So let's get to him now. Thank you very much for coming on my show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, I think a couple of things we need to get established, if I may, before we launch into it all. Do I refer to you as Ronald? Do I refer to you as Ron? And also, I worked in Ireland for a while, and I have to say I should know the correct pronunciation of your middle name. Is it Foyle or Fail?
It's actually File.
File, okay. Okay, well, I was near, very near at the beginning, but not quite there. So it's Ronald File Enright.
That's correct, yes.
And you were an archbishop. Now, that is quite an exalted title in the Catholic Church. So maybe before we talk about the exorcisms and all the rest of it, we need to talk about that. But before we do that, I'd just like to explain to my listener that we do have some sound issues. One of them is quite funny. Your neighbor, Ron, is mowing the lawn, isn't that right, in California now?
That's correct, yes.
And how,
we have an issue.
just give me a little clue. How big is this lawn then? Is it a tennis court size? Is it going to be a while?
It's pretty long. It's pretty wide, and yeah, it's substantial.
Well, hopefully, as the conversation goes on, that part of it will abate. The other thing is, there's a little bit of echo coming back when I speak, but I'm going to use every technical method that I can. We've done everything to get the best possible sound quality, and I think we have that now. So, Ron, let's start now. 40 years and an archbishop. Now, that is a long time, and that is, as I said, an exalted position to get to. So talk to me about your particular journey through the Catholic Church.
Well, first, back in the late 70s, I received what's referred to as holy orders into the priesthood. And from that point on, I was basically having three mentors who were full-fledged exorcists. And they would take me as an assistant, and I assisted them for about 4 years. And after that, I became very much involved and appointed as an exorcist. At that time, we're going back to the early 80s, I was elevated, which is a consecration, into being a bishop. And of course, prior to that, I was a bishop-elect for about a year, and then I was elevated to a bishop. As the years went on, back in the early 80s, I designed a questionnaire that we use for assessment purposes. Now, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself.
I think so, because I'm just interested in your story and your journey, because it's not every Catholic priest who ascends through. I mean, look, I'm from Liverpool. Liverpool is a city that has a very strong Catholic faith and a very strong Protestant faith. And as you may know, two cathedrals, one for the Roman Catholic side of Liverpool and the other one for the Church of England, as they call it, side of Liverpool. And my family were on both sides. So I saw both sides. I knew the priests and I knew the vicars. So I've seen it uniquely on both sides. And it is not every Catholic priest who ascends through the ranks who becomes involved in exorcism. In fact, this is a minority thing, isn't it, for most?
Very true. In fact, it's not really a decision one makes. It's an appointment by God. It's a calling, in other words. So the individual at an early point in their life, they would experience what would be referred to as perhaps even a supernatural event, where they would get a, let's see, for lack of a better term, a vision, okay, and perhaps maybe even a premonition of what's to happen in the very near and distant future.
So you believe you were picked for this?
Chosen, yes, chosen, and I wish I could give you or articulate the reason why I was chosen, but there are priests who have received what's referred to as a divine calling. At that point, it's the better way of just going through the ranks, if you will, and then consulting with your bishop. At the time, you're a priest, of course. You're consulting with your bishop and telling them that you have an interest in the ministry of exorcism and that you feel you have been given a divine message. And as a result, you are there for that purpose. And at that point, you know, the bishop, whoever the jurisdictional bishop is, would contact another bishop who may be an exorcist and find out if they could be a mentor for their young priest to go up in the ranks as an exorcist. So you're an assistant for about 4 to 5 years. It depends on the individual. Some priests make it in 2 years, and then they're given an assignment as an exorcist for that jurisdiction. For me, it took 4 years. So, which is fine. And as a result, that's basically how it works. The person going through the ranks, as you call it, they're following a very old tradition that dates back to thousands of years. And as a result, once they're appointed, then they work for that particular jurisdictional bishop, and which could be, you know, 100, 200, 1,000 people, whatever the case may be. And in the very beginning, back in the early 80s, we were receiving a lot of requests for the presence of a priest to do either a house blessing or do some type of evaluation on strange behavior that they may be reporting and telling us about. And when that happens, then, of course, the priest has to go out and do a visitation.
Okay.
And then
so this is, as I said, it's a minority thing. Not every Catholic priest does this by any manner or means. Can you estimate, you know, for every parish, for every jurisdiction within the United States, and it may well apply to this country too, how many exorcists are there? You know, per number of Catholic churches, how many exorcists per, say, 10? Would there be one for every 10?
No, it's It's an interesting way, the way this is actually defied, if you will. Each jurisdiction runs autonomously, but yet they're under one umbrella, which is the Ministry of Exorcism. We have priests that are in not only in the U.S., but we have priests that are in the U.K. We have priests in 24 countries around the world. And as a result, they've submitted to the actual discipline and learning of what we refer to as the process. And the process is a whole program that goes into how to evaluate an individual, let's say someone who is claiming symptoms of demonic possession, and to find out whether or not it is a true demonic issue, or is it just a mental, perhaps some form of psychosis. And if that be the case, we have to make sure that we could distinguish the two.
And we'll get into that in the second part of our conversation, because it's massively important, as anybody who's ever done exorcisms or been involved in them that I've spoken to has made that point, that that's absolutely crucial to assess the person that you're dealing with first for their safety, and potentially as well as yours, I would guess. So you are part, this I didn't know, Ron, you are part of an elite, and it's an international elite. It isn't something that is, you know, part of the Catholic Church in America, the Catholic Church in the United Kingdom. You are an international brotherhood.
Yeah, I guess you can say that. Yes.
And why do you think the Catholic Church in Rome has, you know, put so many resources into training exorcists? There is a course that priests can go on. I'm not sure whether it's open to people from outside the church, but there is definitely a course, and I think it may have been stepped up in recent years. It was certainly reported in the newspapers last year that the Catholic Church in Rome was doing this. Why do you think there is that effort?
Well, probably because of the number of people that are claiming symptoms of demonic possession or some kind of demonic issue. And to get down to the actual facts, there has to be someone who's trained to actually address these issues. So I think that over the years, it appears that more and more cases are actually being developed in within the jurisdictions, and no doubt training is probably the number one thing. The training in Rome, by the way, is open not only to clergy, but to laity. It's not an exclusive type of scenario.
So if I wanted to go there and do this, would it be easy for me to just drop them a line and say, whatever the fee is, I'll pay it. Now, as soon as flights get back to Italy, Lord knows when that will be, I'll see you there.
I believe so. Now, not having anything to do with that particular jurisdiction or structure, I can only speak for in regards to my particular jurisdiction, which covers 24 countries, and we have a specialized part of the ministry, which is called exorcism. The average parish priest does not have the training or perhaps maybe even not the insight in regards to making an assessment and dealing with the demonic issue at hand. So it has to be a very small, in fact, it is a very small population within the priesthood that have been called to do this. And once they have the call, there's no question about it. It's like a flash in a dark room. You know, it comes that abrupt. You know, you realize that you've been called, and it's through a divine nature. As I said, it's a supernatural experience.
Well, I guess on so many levels it has to be, because of what you're dealing with or what you say you're dealing with. You know, the question as a layman, and I'm sure a lot of my listeners are thinking exactly this, is, I know that you said that you felt, and everybody who does this feels, that they have had a calling to do it. But bearing in mind what this involves and the sorts of people that you're dealing with, and you never quite know, I wouldn't think, what you're going into, what situation you're going into next, why would anybody want to do this?
Well, it's not like a regular job. It's not like, you know,
that's for sure.
So as a result, you know, you have to kind of like look at the situation and know that the boss is not the your archbishop or whoever is running the jurisdiction, but it's God. And if God has placed you in a position to work, in this ministry. That's what you basically do. You know, you could try to, you know, submit your pink slip and just say, or, you know, I'm not, you know, interested anymore. I'm dropping out of the ministry. You know, that's possible. Then maybe their calling wasn't true. But a person, a clergyman that has a true calling to do this, they're in it, you know, till the very last day of their life. And so this is what we do. We're committed to do this, and do this we do. You asked me about retirement. Hmm. You know, I decided to do that about 5 years ago. I almost died as a result of an exorcism, and I was in the hospital for about 30 days. I had 3 procedures, and I had a 2-liter sac wrapped around my heart.
Okay, we'll get into that when we talk about exorcism specifically in the next segment. So you tried to retire, but I think you're telling me that something out there wouldn't let you.
Yes. Huh. And as a result, I've been getting requests, which I'm no longer doing, but I have bishops and archbishops throughout the world, and I could assign these to them. But the whole point of being retired is not to work so hard. I'm 67 years old, which I'm not a spring chicken. You know, I thank God for my health, my mental stability, and all these other things. But the real issue comes down to what your physical condition is and what you could handle, especially when you're confronted with something that is very dark, something that we refer to as the demonic. Hmm. So I could, right now I'm in the process of putting a international directory together where I'm listing all of our bishops, archbishops, investigators, and so on. So I'm going to be making and I'll be publishing this online, and it'll be attached to my website.
It's very important that we say this just as we come up to a break point here and take some commercials. There will be people, and I can understand why they might say this, who would say that you're in a way pandering to people who have mental or other issues, who've deluded themselves into believing that their problems are somehow without them rather than within them. And really, all of this is doing no good. Just a brief response to that, and then we can proceed from there.
Our organization has 3 psychiatrists. And what we do in regards to part of the process is we collect psychological evaluations, we collect medical records, and we filter them through our physicians. We see whether or not what they're experiencing can be explained medically or psychologically, or if it's a true demonic issue. And if it does, we rely on our investigators to assess and collect the information that we need to make a proper assessment.
Back to California, Archbishop Ronald File Enright, Ron File Enright, exorcist for more than 40 years, who sort of kind of tried to retire, but Ron, the work has kept finding you.
That's exactly true. I mean, as time goes on and as our technology becomes more advanced and more accurate in terms of reporting things around the world, we are receiving all kinds of requests, everything from demonic infestation to demonic possession, which is very rare. And so we have to approach each case carefully and make sure that what we're doing is right on the button, because if we make any mistakes, it could be very fatal to the individual who is a victim, who is claiming symptoms of possession. And if an exorcism is actually done on an individual who hasn't been properly assessed, then there's a good possibility that it will simply go the other direction, which will drive the individual to a deeper state of psychosis or, even worse, suicide.
So you talked about the need for medical intervention in this and medical assessment. Presumably then medical people are involved at every stage.
Yes, that's very true. The psychiatrists, of course, are MDs. They're medical doctors, mm-hmm. and they specialize in various forms of psychosis.
Right. So they don't necessarily believe that it's demons inhabiting these people. Is that so?
We have... actually, they're very much open. They acknowledge the fact that there is a condition, And most of the time, these conditions cannot be explained. What they do is the psychiatrist, what they do is they review the reports. They make their evaluations based on the materials that we give them, which would be psychological evaluations from other physicians. And they would make some kind of assessment. A lot of the cases are revealed to be beyond a shadow of a doubt that there is something supernatural or demonic issues involved. So as a result, they would make their report based on their training, mm-hmm. and they would give us their recommendations, which would be identifying whether or not it is a true psychosis, or if there's some other type of a physical disorder that would perhaps maybe explain the strange behavior. But I will like to add this as well. When my people do their assessments, it's all taped. And so it's taped for my benefit so I could review what they're reviewing. This is how we could work in 24 countries. My position has been for the past, I don't know, three decades, is the chief exorcist, which means that I actually make the decisions in regards to their findings. Now, understand, right now, each bishop has their own jurisdiction and they are autonomous. But of course, they know they could always come to me for my input. At least that's what my status is right now. I will give encouragement to my clergy and investigators and try to keep them close bay. And this is how we actually operate. We all have this particular calling. But getting back to the issue about assessments, the physicians and the psychiatrist, which are both, they are not only open to it, but they've seen things that cannot be explained. This is one of the reasons why they decided to come on board in our organization. And that is to try to find out more input in regards to something that's just beyond the comprehension of the average person.
And can you think of cases, Ron, where you've changed the mind, perhaps, of some hard-nosed medic who really thinks that this is all in the subject's mind and that there is nothing supernatural going on here? Can you think of cases where somebody like that has had their mind changed for them?
Well, there are some cases where individuals are not only demonstrating what's obviously something that is just beyond belief in regards to levitation or in regards to things flying around the room, in regards to things that just simply cannot be explained. When we have that and we're reviewing that kind of assessment, we are pretty sure that it's not any form of psychosis or physical, abnormal scenario. So if that be the case, then we look further into it. Now, this is referred to as the physical manifestations that take place within the immediate space of the victim. So when this happens, there is no doubt. Now, we have our psychiatrists who have actually witnessed these things in terms of watching the video of the report along with the assessment report. So they've seen these things, and some of them have actually been in a room where the ritual is actually being done. I have some clergy who are actually psychologists, and they too are not only on board with this whole belief system, it's because they've actually witnessed it. And of course, the initial divine calling is also another confirmation that what they're doing is real.
You talked a lot about how you assess, quite rightly, the people who go through these things, and you have to satisfy yourselves that there isn't something else going on with them. But what about the assessments you do of the people that you bring in, the medical professionals and the actual priests who are doing this? You know, they've got to be fairly hard-nosed and tough people themselves, haven't they?
Yes, that's very true. But as you know, everyone has their own particular perception about certain things in life. But when it comes to this subject matter, they're not only on board, but they're ready to fight the good fight, if you will. So they walk into this with their eyes wide open. Now, what brought them to the point of joining an organization such as ours, that's another issue. I like to think that everyone in the organization is honest and that their calling is true, and that they are been led to this point in their lives to join this organization and to join the good fight, if you will.
Is this organization, and I should have asked this at the top of this, is it a part of or separate from the Catholic Church?
We have what's referred to as apostolic lines of succession, which means that the church, even the Vatican, will recognize our sacraments, and there some of their parishioners would actually come. But again, we're not in that part of the ministry. What we do is strictly the ministry of exorcism. So this is all we do. This is all we specialize in. We do have some priests that are parish priests, but they are not—they're not full-time. What they do is they concentrate on this ministry because we have so many cases that are coming in. In the United States, we have about 18 states in our country, in the U.S., and so they're communicating and they're basically sharing their information, and then we try to make that assessment. Assessment is so important because if we fail in regards to getting all the details, and if it cannot be explained, but yet something somehow goes through the cracks and we're off, then it could be very devastating to the victim. So this is very serious. What we're doing is that this is where our full attention is focused in this ministry. And people's lives are actually at stake. We've even had some people in our organization who has had all kinds of terrible things that are linked to this ministry in regards to their physical condition, in regards to their mental stability. Understand what we're dealing with is something that's beyond the traditional comprehension of the way things work. And especially when it's something you can't see, but yet you see the after effects of something that's truly there. So it gets to be, I hate to use the word, but it gets to be a little scary after a while.
Well, it sounds it. Talk to me about some of the things, and I know you had your own story, and we'll get to that as well. Some of the things that have happened to some of the practitioners then. You said that some of them pay a price in themselves.
Physically and mentally. When you're confronted with something that's that terrifies your inner being. And logically, you know, you may try to hold on to what you have in order to do your work, but if you get to that point, there is a breaking point. We have had members who have actually resigned because of that reason. We have some that are have mental issues where they are, where it just cannot be it cannot be identified. We have individuals that have actually have some form of attachment in regards to the demonic. And
when you say attachment, you mean that they've encountered demons that they've taken home with them?
Everything has a residual, okay? The demons have a residual signature that they leave on the minds and on the bodies of every person that has come close to the source. And when that happens, you have to deal with it. You have to either deal with it with help, and sometimes because of the demonic oppression that may take place, these individuals can be very lost within themselves. I like to be honest with you and tell you that we've all survived this experience, but that would be true.
So the people who do this, Ron, and sorry to interrupt, but do they have to sign some kind of disclaimer that if they are left in some way scarred by the experience, they can't come back and, you know, claim compensation from you?
Since we're a 501c3 organization, we're a nonprofit organization, and we don't charge for any of our rituals, and therefore our only support comes from a divine nature, and as a result, we're all in this, and we know that there is no litigations that could ever be involved unless it's with God. The true boss is God, and we're all just servants. And so what we do is we rely on the technical process of it. We have some excellent technicians that operate various recording devices. We have excellent team members that are professional assessments, professional assessors, I should say. And what they could do is they give us all the details that most people would miss. In regards to the victims and the people who call us and require our services, of course, we have them sign an agreement stating that what we're going to do is may leave some form of residual effect. If successful, they'll be blessed, but there it always can go sideways. And when that happens, that's not a good thing. That's why we have to stay on, we always stay on point in regards to how the analytical approach that we use is effective, and we stay on point, and because these things could happen.
And you're sure in yourself that you're wrestling evil and demons rather than just, look, the human mind is an amazing thing. We don't fully understand it. Perhaps we never will. You're not just wrestling with aspects of people's own psyche. And that in it, that carries with it enormous dangers, I would have thought.
There's a lot of debate that goes on, okay? Not so much in the spiritual community, but mainly in the in the perception of the world, if you will, other than the spiritual, of course. And they will debate and they will confirm that there is a thing called psychokinesis, where you're able to move things with your mind. And if young children are in the house, or in the household, and they are somehow have some kind of emotional disturbance, they have, and it's, again, according to some sources, they do have the ability to make things happen within the home, which means that it's not a demonic issue. It means it's still quite interesting, but it's explained scientifically why things move in the household. It's explained why, you know, things just, you know, just can't be explained unless you have this insight. So, you know, it's a whole interesting scenario. We live in a very mysterious and dark world, especially now.
So are you telling me that you're willing to accept that some of what you deal with may emanate from the person and doesn't necessarily emanate from some outward evil?
Well, at least that's the interpretation of people who are not in this ministry. People will always try to explain things, okay, with a very small perception of what's really going on. And as a result, you know, they always draw conclusions that may not be accurate, but basically on their opinion. The scientific community, which we respect and work with, makes and can make many mistakes. We in the spiritual community, we make mistakes as well. So it's all part of being and experiencing the human process.
Sorts of mistakes do you make, do you think?
If we have, let's say, if an individual is claiming some type of disturbance in regards to some type of demonic issue, and we go out and we see this person, and this person is doing unbelievable things with their body, you know, contorting their body and trying to mimic what demonic possession would be, and, you know, and our majority of our investigators are not psychiatrists, so what they see, you know, they could overreact and perhaps maybe inflate the assessment report. And, you know, it's very possible. And maybe they've gone through some kind of seizure at the time while they were doing the actual assessment. That's possible. But the whole thing is based on a person's perception and what they see. Since I first contacted individuals, that's investigators, since they're not psychiatrists, they could only report what they see. And sometimes if we feel that for some reason the information that was submitted is valid and there is truly a demonic issue and there is not, and we go through the whole process of the ritual of exorcism, then this could throw them back into a further deep into their psychosis, and we'd be feeding into it, and it could be devastating for everyone involved.
Archbishop Ronald File Enright. Ron to us is in California. We're talking about exorcism. It is a discussion not for the faint-hearted, but then I have said that a number of times. Let's get back to Ron now in California. And Ron, I think we need to talk about the specific cases, some of them that you've dealt with. And there was one that you alluded earlier in our conversation to, where you yourself, you feel, were targeted by something that nearly killed you.
Yes. I'm going to save that as for my last story. I'm going to work up to it by telling you of some recent things, let's say recent years.
Oh, no, I'm very happy to do that. And let's just ask this question before you get into the stories. Yeah. I was a big fan of Malachi Martin, whose work I'm sure you will be aware of, Irish priest based in New York who believed that he was fighting a battle with evil and believed that evil was everywhere in this world and could be fought, but the fight was hard, and that, you know, words like Lucifer and Satan were words that were actually relevant in a modern world. Now, sadly, Malachi Martin isn't with us anymore, but he believed he was in a fight constantly with good and evil. It sounds to me like that's how you feel too.
Absolutely. In fact, his expression truly illustrated what we're all about, because there is a battle and the battle goes on constantly. And yes, it's every moment and every day. This battle doesn't take a break. This is the battle of good versus evil, if you will. And as a result, we live in a spiritual world that so many things are happening, and it's right in front of us, and we don't see it because it's not in our realm of existence, but yet it is. It's so close, and as a result, we do feel the residuals from time to time. And I'm going to share a story with you if we're ready for this. This is involving me personally. Let's see. I'll start by saying that we have investigators that do first contact interviews. They do the filming of the interview from start to finish. They do everything in regards to covering the individual who is the victim. And anything that's being manifested, that's being physically displayed, we capture that as well. And then we make an assessment. Okay, and then after that whole process is done, they submit their reports to me. I get a copy of what the video is, the contents. I get a written report, which is the assessment report. I review the psychological evaluations as well as the medical records. And then I do my thing in terms of passing the medical and psychological reports to our psychiatrist. And then I work on what I see in regards to the actual report of what took place. And so I'm viewing this on the screen, and I'm viewing the actual interview. And the interview takes place, okay, in perhaps maybe someone's kitchen or a living room. But as it takes place, things start happening. So I'm looking at the screen, at my monitor, and I'm looking at the actual interview that's taking place. And so I kind of concentrate on the individual, the victim, and I'm looking for physical signs of something that would be considered unexplainable. I'm looking at the immediate surroundings in the room and so on. So I'm studying the screen, and my natural position when I'm doing this is I'm about 3 feet from the actual monitor, because I'm really studying everything in the room, the person, the actual investigators, as well as all the physical things that are around. And so as I'm doing this, I'm studying this, something very strange happens. Now, before I get to that, let me explain the demonic behavior and what the demonic is all about in regards to our existence in our realm of knowledge and reality. The demons, and angels fall in this category too, demons, they are not confined to space and time. They can move from one century to another in a split second. They have that ability, and they have the wisdom of the ages. So they are not only incredibly intelligent, but they can move from one room to another in a split second, from one century to another. They have this ability. And as a result, they roam the earth, and they have from the very beginning of time. Now, with that being said, let's get back to the actual story. I'm looking at my monitor, studying the details and everything that's taking place in this evaluation. And as I am, something very odd appears on my screen, on my monitor. And I'm seeing it move from one side of the screen, from right to left. And it's going very slowly. It looks like a black fuzz that's just simply moving, and it's going real slow. So I'm thinking, well, perhaps maybe this was something that was, maybe the recording device was had some dust, it wasn't properly maintained, or, you know, it was some kind of technical problem. But as this is fuzz is going there, I paid no mind to it, and it slowly went across the screen. So I'm looking at the details of the actual assessment, and then it comes by again from left to right, very slowly, but just enough to get my attention. So I'm looking at this black fuzz, and it's going slowly, and it's slowly going from one side of the screen to the other. Now it has my attention, because now it has an actual, seems like some type of intelligent process that's going on, where it's actually looking at the person who is looking at them. So I'm looking at this black fuzz. It's going very slowly and it's inching. And I'm looking at it. I'm saying, what the heck is going on? And so I'm looking further at the screen. And then it slowly stops at the center of the screen. And it seems to start expanding in shape. So I'm like totally fascinated. What the heck's going on? And again, in the back of my mind, I'm saying, well, this is possibly a technical problem. But let's, you know, keep looking and see what all this develops. Anyway, I'm staring at the screen. I'm about maybe 4 inches from the actual screen. I'm studying it that close because I can't figure out what that black fuzz is. As it seems to be expanding very slowly, and then at that point, it happened. Bam. What was in the screen, what I was viewing, jumped out of the screen and pushed me off from my chest, and my chair has wheels, so it pushed me back about 4 feet. And yeah, I was really shocked for that moment.
You would be. And so you're saying that it's possible for something that is manifesting on a computer screen, if you are connected with it in some way, to be aware of you, number one, and to engage with you in the most frightening way, number two.
Exactly. Exactly. This whole episode occurred by looking at an assessment that was done a month ago. So this wasn't in real time. It was done a month ago. As I mentioned in the earlier part of the story, the behavior of a demonic entity can move from one space to another within seconds. And that, those seconds could be, in terms of our time frame, it could be centuries. They have that ability. This was a month ago, and it was as it was happening right in real time right now, as it came through my screen, and it physically left a mark on my body as it pushed me back. I almost fell off the chair. Of course, my fascination of the whole thing started after the initial shock, because that's never happened before, where an actual demonic entity can jump out of the screen and into, you know, there's a lot of people who do paranormal investigations and who are scientists, if you will, and they look at things in a very systematic, articulate type of way, and they could probably explain that this type of phenomenon can happen because electricity is involved, and electricity seems to, that electrical current seems to be able to carry not only the signals but also other things in the supernatural world that could actually be transmitted from point A to point B. It's just a theory that most people, some people believe that it's a good possibility. So in other words, your computer could be a portal, and that portal could be going, extending itself into another dimension, for all you know.
But let's make this very clear before we move on to other stories, that this was a report of a case that you were reviewing on your computer screen, and something literally like a computer virus, but something demonic, had infected the report, and then it engaged with you by leaping out of the screen and pushing you.
Yeah, it's like its presence was transported a month ago to my present time, and it used the computer, my computer, my screen as a device that could enter into my present and make itself known.
And what do you think it was? That's very important. What was this thing?
It was a demonic entity that just wanted to say, I'm here, I'm present, and I'm in control. And of course, the devil is a liar. So, you know, these things are, you know, as you go on and doing these cases, and I've done, in a span of 40 years, I've done over 850,000 assessments. That's a lot. It sounds like a lot.
And this particular thing, did you get rid of it? Were you able to vanquish it?
What it was just an acknowledgement. What they were trying to make their presence known to me, and what I was doing, I should discontinue. Of course, you know, being who I am, I just simply said a prayer, and I like to St. Michael's prayer, if you're familiar with it. Mm. And And then after that, I just continued to do. I did not want to give the victory to the demonic.
Right.
This is part of the battle. Okay. This is a real struggle. For some skeptics, they will say, "Oh well, obviously something happened, but it's not exactly how it's being explained."
I understand. One of the things you said in an interview that I listened to before doing this conversation with you was that forget The Exorcist. That's just Hollywood. The real fight is much more scary and things far more frightening than those things which appeared in that piece of Hollywood fiction happen when you're actually doing these encounters.
This is very true. A lot of us have been physically assaulted by invisible entities and has left actual marks. In fact, I had posted some pictures of some of these interesting scenarios. This is on Facebook, actually, where you could see a footprint, literally a footprint across my chest. And this is not Hollywood. This is real life, real stuff. Also, I have a handprint photograph that was taken and a few years ago. And as a result, this was another scenario in which we could talk about. The point is that they are able to leave the residual of their presence on your physical body.
And that is something that isn't to do with the actual victim, as you call them. This is something outside the victim, or is this the victim exhibiting what some people talk about, and you've talked about this yourself. Some of these people suddenly find themselves with massively amplified strength, etc.
Yes, and understand it's not the victim. It's the demonic entity that's within them. They demonstrate their personalities, not the victim's personalities. The victim is like in the back seat and just watching everything, even though after the ritual and after they've been delivered and all this other stuff, they have no memory of what actually took place. But at the time, they're watching everything, and they're like, their hands are tied, they can't do anything. The demonic takes full control of the body, and as a result, when that happens, we're dealing with not the individual, but we're dealing with the demonic in regards to strength, in regards to incisive knowledge, where the demonic can look around the room and actually tell what has taken place in a person's life, all the dark things that may have taken place in their lives. And as a result, this is just another one of those supernatural events that take place when a person is possessed. The levitation, for example, that is actual physical evidence.
You've seen people rise up and off the ground, have you?
I'm going to say within a span of 40 years, I've probably witnessed well over a dozen.
And what is it that is actually levitating them? What is holding them there?
It's outside of our realm of understanding, because it is comes from the spirit, and it comes from all the elements that are basically all around us. When the demonic interacts with a human being, there are lots of things that take place within the human being. And everything could be from things producing out of their mouth or nose or ears. Solid objects can actually come out. Their hair color can change. Their skin tone will actually transform into a dark gray matter. And lots of wrinkles and deep wrinkles. In some cases, if the demonic entity, the personality that is, decides to physically harm the body of the human, can actually drive the human into a state of just either cutting themselves or placing them in areas where it'd be terribly harmful. We're doing an exorcism one day, and we're in the middle of the room, and then all these things started falling from the ceiling. We had no idea what the heck was falling from the ceiling. Now, most of our cases are done on Skid Row in these run-down hotels where people are open to all the dark elements, okay, of the world, okay, like drug addiction, like other things that places a person in a mental state of mind where things can actually happen to them. And most cases, it's very dark and very demonic. We're in the middle of an exorcism, we're doing an exorcism, and these things started falling and kept falling from the ceiling. Now, understand, the room was not well lit. It was kind of a dim, the lights were kind of dimmed. I think there was only one lamp in the whole room, so it was like dim. Then it had blankets over the windows, so it was kind of dark in that respect. So there was no outside light. And so these things coming down, I had no idea what it was until one dropped on my book. That's on my the ritual book. And when I realized it was moving, I realized that it wasn't just dust. It was actually maggots. The maggots were falling from the ceiling, and they were falling on us in our hair, down our shirts, okay? And it was totally, well, it grossed me out anyway. The priest that was assisting me, he was in a state of shock because he's never seen this before, and that is maggots falling from the ceiling. No explainable reason.
And what about people talking in strange voices and weird tongues, that kind of thing? You come across that?
Oh, yeah, that happens. That happens. In fact, that's one of the main things that we look at and when we're doing an assessment, okay? And again, it's a personality that comes out and it verbalizes itself. And it could see it's either a different voice, it may have an accent, it may even speak a different language other than they're familiar with. So as a result, all these things can take place. And again, it's coming from the personality of the demonic entity that's in the person.
How come most of us never encounter anything like that?
Because we're not aware of such things actually being real. Majority of us, we go through life, and we go through life sometimes with blinders on. And if we don't understand something, and if there's no like real satisfactory proof, at least intellectually, then we people seem to just think, well, that's just make believe, or that's just Hollywood, or that's just a fantasy world. And as a result, a lot of us are labeled as kooks, you know, because we dealing with things that are unseen. We're dealing with the aftermath of those unseen events.
I understand we are rapidly running out of time, Ron, and you know, we promised ourselves that you would tell the story quickly of what it was that personally attacked you, and I think it put you in hospital, you think?
Yes, it has. Yes, it did. Would you like me to share that with you now?
Or? Yeah, sure. We've only got 2 minutes on the program, but I'm sure my producer, Reese, will give me that time.
Okay, I'll try to make this quick and fast. During the ritual at exorcism, I was actually struck, assaulted 3 times by an invisible 2x4, if you will. That's how it felt. It caved right into my left side of my body. I stooped and took my breath away. I continued the ritual. We were successful. I had a room full of assistants, and they assisted me to my car. We went home, and when I was home, I couldn't hardly breathe. I was going through all kinds of physical changes. I called my family physician, and he suggested I go immediately to the emergency room, which I did. They did a scan, and they realized that I had to be admitted immediately. What they found was a 2-liter sack of blood that was wrapped around my heart, and it was at the exact place where I was struck 3 times by this invisible entity. The medical community had no understanding or knowledge as to how I succumbed to this condition. As a result, I was placed in the hospital. I went through 3 procedures and 30 days in isolation. Wow. And the CDC got involved too, and they did not quite understand what was going on. So it was an unexplainable event, at least to them, and to us that were on the inside, we know exactly what took place.
Boy, that's quite a story to leave it on. We're out of time. Archbishop Ronald Fyle Enright. Ron, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for speaking with me about these things. I don't know what to make of any of it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
The remarkable Ronald Fyle Enright, Archbishop and exorcist. Let me know what you think about that. You can go to my website. If you want to check out my Facebook page, by the way, the official Facebook page, The Unexplained with Howard Hughes, that would be great. The more people I've got sharing and following that, the better. More great guests in the pipeline here on The Unexplained, so until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online, and please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay home, stay calm, and above all, please, stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.